passage. Those stolen Africans step out of the ocean from the wombs of the ships and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those Africans, shackled in leg irons and enslaved, step out of the acres of cane fields and cotton fields and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. Those lynched in the magnolias, swinging on the limbs of the weeping willows, rotting food for the vultures, step down and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those tied, bound, and whipped from Brazil to Mississippi, step out and tell your story. Those in Jamaica, in the fields of Cuba, in the swamps of Florida, the rice fields of South Carolina, you waiting Africans, step out and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. From Alabama to Suriname, up to the caves of Louisiana, come out, you African spirits. Step out and claim your stories. You raped, slave bred, castrated, burned, tarred and feathered, roasted, chopped, lobotomized, bound and gagged, you African spirits, spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage.
Oladamare, Jinyami, Olorun, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amun-Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our requests will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We said libation, libation, libation. It is good.
That people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
setbacks. Natural fact is, oh honey, that I can't pay my taxes. Oh, make me wanna holler, throw up both my hands. Yeah, and make me wanna holler, throw up both my hands.
My name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank, and I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am so happy to you are able to join us here today. We have expanded our network of programs. We are so happy that the Black Reality Think Tank family is growing. And our program this evening is the maiden voyage for the African-American ancestors. African-American Elders Council. And so we'll be joined just a few minutes with Brother Alfonso Watkins, who is going to be the host and introduce the program to you. We thank you. We'll be here every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Right here on timeforanawakening.com radio platform, which is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. We do have three other programs that air on our system that are very important to us. We have one on Tuesday evening from 7 to 9, and that program is hosted by yours truly. And then on Thursday from 8 to 10, we will be joined by a group of young women who are millennials who are going to be talking about family, children, and just a group of things that impact us so much in our community. And they'll be on from 8 to 10, hosted by Ms. Shani B. and Lady V. And then on Saturday morning afternoons at 3 o'clock, we just completed this program. It's the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. And that program is hosted by Ms. LaWanda Chambers and Ms. Leola Williams. And wonderful dynamic conversation this afternoon previously on Get Your Damn Knee Off of My Neck. Excellent. All of our programs are cataloged and they are archived, and we can go back at any point in time and listen to them. You simply go to our website at www.timeforanawakening.com. www.timeforanawakening.com. That is the website for the radio platform. And you simply go into the podcast portal and put in the Black Reality Think Tank, and you can go back and listen to any of our programs that have aired. There is other programs that I'll talk about at the top of the hour that also plays here. Very dynamic system, very dynamic conversations held throughout the country. Actually throughout the world. This is internet. So we are all over the world. We get people from Jamaica. We get people from Africa. We get people from the Philippines will quite often call us. So we're so happy to take advantage of this this forum. I appreciate so much to Brother Elliot. Shout out to those brothers from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who are the program directors of all of this. We thank them for allowing us to come on and share our ideas. We are call-in format. For those of you brothers and sisters who are on listening via the internet, if you decide you have a question or you would like to make a statement, you would simply call area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, area code 215-490-9832. And we will see you, and Brother Alfonso will have a chance to entertain your statements or questions. So we really invite you to do that. So, again, we're going to get right into our discussion, and we want to hopefully you will join in, offer your comments, your questions. And I'm excited because I said this is the maiden voyage for this program. It is the Elders Council program. So at this time, let me introduce to you the creator and the executive director for the Elders Council is Brother Alfonso Watkins. I'm so happy that he is here with us in a we want to kind of, like I said, get right into our conversation and let me go there. Good afternoon, Brother Alfonso. I'm sorry, Brother Alfonso. Go again. The mic was still off.
May I have permission to speak, Brother?
Yes, speak.
Yes, thank you. Once again, family, it's truly an honor and a pleasure to be with you, being able to share this platform and share information as well and receive information so that we can continue to the liberation and the freedom struggle of our people. Today I'm going to reintroduce Baba normally does a piece where he honors an ancestor. And today we are going to honor Dr. Baba Conrad Worrell. And Dr. Baba Panrel Rayal was born August 15, 1941, and he transitioned to an ancestor June 3rd, 2020. Baba was an African-American writer, educator, activist, and talk show host for the WVON call-in program on Target. Organizations he was involved with include the Million Man March, the National Black United Front, royal activism centered on the need for greater independence in African-American life and helping young people better understand the relationships between power and institutions. His early life. Baba Royal was born in Pasadena, California. His father was active in the NAACP and the YMCA and played a large role in influencing Royal to become an activist on his own. Conrad moved to Chicago when he was 9. He was married to Arlene Worrell, and they had 7 daughters. He became a serious athlete, but was awakening to the prejudice and racial segregation that was presented when his swim team faced heckling. Despite racial hardships, Worrell pursued football, basketball, and track. In 1962, Conrad was drafted into the Army and stationed in Okinawa, Japan. While abroad, he read much about African-American history, culture, and politics. He returned to America in 1963 and attended George William College, majoring in applied behavioral science. While at college, he passed experience overseas of seeing many African-Americans sent to war led him to become an active in the Black Power movement. One of the organizations he was involved in was the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was one of the first African-American civil rights groups against war. Royal graduated in 1968 and was hired by Westside YMCA as a program director. He left to pursue his PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His focus was on curriculum and instruction in secondary social studies. He wanted to help students understand the relationship between institutions and power. Upon receiving his degree from Wisconsin, Royal taught it 2 years at George Williams College. And in 1975, he transferred to faculty of Northeastern Illinois University, where he led the Center for Inner City Studies. His activism. In addition to his teaching duties, Royal was involved with the National Black United Front. The organization deals with addressing political, social, economic, and cultural forces that impact people of African descent in America. The NBUF has been known for pushing a program of study that emphasizes the role of Africans and African Americans. Warriors was elected Economic Development Commissioner of the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America. He was a special consultant for Fields Operations in the Million Man March, which took place on October 16, 1965. And he authored a weekly column entitled Royal's World, once again honoring Baba Royal. And we pray that you continue to do the work on that side as well as what you were doing on this side. Once again, thank you, family. So part of what we're doing with this program is reintroducing the concept of Black African developmental psychology. And so part of that is seeing ourselves through the lens of our creator and our ancestors and understanding the sacrifices that many of our ancestors have made in the foundational of knowledge and research that has been put forth, that is at our usage, that I think we need to really start focusing in and continue to build on. But before I go into that, I wanted to share some information as it relates to what we're doing here in Milwaukee with the council, or the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And this is a production of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And part of what we're doing here is creating a space or platform for the elders to take control of the narrative that is being displayed or being talked about within the Black community. So I just want to read the purpose, the mission, and then go into some of the think tanks. The purpose of the Sankofa Council of Elders is to build a council of elders to address the environmental and social conditions and human disparities we face in the city of Milwaukee around the foundational universal African principles of unity and the principles of cooperation. These principles will provide an overarching and unifying ideology for the collective mission of building a united front with one united, unified voice in the city of Milwaukee for the descendants of Africans in the Milwaukee community. The mission: to engage, aid, and assist the continuous building of a movement and network of elders who are governed by the principles of Ma'at and the Ngugu Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa, to address the disparities and circumstances we face in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. As we move into the 21st century, the role and function will be the provision of one voice of spiritual guidance, formation of policy, and the development of programs and services in all areas of human activity, in various projects which will contribute to the growth, self-governance, and economic empowerment of the African-American community in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In a major part of the Sankofa Council of Elders is these think tanks. And part of what we are, once again, attempting to do is to create think tanks around spiritual development, health, which is our physical health and psychological health, education, politics, economics, defense, security, warfare, law, dealing with the justice system, information, media, arts and culture, science and technology, and then labor, which is the human capital component. So with the Sankofa Council of Elders is once again, it's an opportunity for us to have some intergenerational conversations, but with establishing these think tanks is an opportunity to bring some of our genius within the context of our elders back into the community to formulate and create or do critical analysis of the disparities that we face in every city where we are located. There are just a number of different disparities that we are facing. So I'm just going to read some of those disparities off. The infant mortality rate for Black women and Black children, single-parent households, families living in poverty, the high incarceration rate of Black males and Black females, high teenage pregnancy, the failing school systems, high levels of dropout rates for our children, the highest wage gap between Europeans and African Americans, poor access to health care and housing. In many of our communities, we're dealing with food deserts. We have high levels of illiteracy. Milwaukee is one of the most segregated cities in the country. And in many cities, we're dealing with high levels of human trafficking. As far as our life expectancy, many of us are living much shorter than Europeans due to environmental and social toxicity that we are attempting to function in. So those are just some of the disparities that we are dealing with. But once again, the Sankofa Council of Elders is once again an opportunity for us to establish an institution to create policy and curriculum to move us and our children into the 21st century in our local areas. So hopefully, brothers and sisters who are listening that have Council of Elders in their communities, we have an opportunity to share information, break bread, and do some collaboration, because I think it's going to be important as we come out of this pandemic, the riots, that we have some things in place for our babies and our children who are out in the street rioting right now and protesting. And I think it's critical that we create spaces for young brothers and sisters who to introduce them to the concept of Pan-Africanism, Black nationalism, and understanding their relationship to our creator and our ancestors to move them once again into the 21st century. So that's the piece with the Council of Elders. A little bit about myself. I am the sixth child of Grant and Bernice Watkins. My mother and father got married at, I think it was 16 or 17. And my mother was on a plantation in the Northern. My father would come up and visit his grandfather, who was the overseer on that plantation. So my mother was the first out of her 11 siblings to get off the plantation and move up north. So I am, I guess I would be the first or second generation of that great migration to the north. So those of you who are aware of that know what that was like for our people to move out of those conditions and pursue employment, pursue opportunities to avoid some of the terrorism, the most domestic terrorism that was taking place in the South. But once again, getting to the North, some of the conditions were very similar. So as the sixth child, I'm the first one to go to college and finish college. I got a associate's degree in liberal arts, a bachelor's degree in community education, and a master's degree in educational psychology with a focus in community counseling from the University of Milwaukee. But once I got those degrees, I began to study the scholarly work of so many of our elders. And I would be remiss if I didn't name some of those brothers and sisters, like Dr. John Henry Clark, Wade Nobles, Kobe K.K. Caban, Dr. Wright, Francis Cress Welsing, the Hares, the sister Boy Franklin, Dr. Franklin, Dr. Richard King. I could just go on and on of those African scholars who have laid a foundation of a theoretical orientation to address our state of being spiritually, psychologically, and physically. So as we, on this program, we are going to be having some, once again, do some critical analysis of information, but also we want to be able to come up with some solution-focused type conversations to come up with some theoretical modalities, some practices, some implementation things that we can create and practice amongst those of us who are practicing Sankofa. I think it's going to be critical that, once again, we create these spaces and places in cities where wherever you go, there is a institution, a space, I'm going to say a space or institution for you to go and be amongst brothers and sisters who are like-minded. And once again, everybody's not going to participate in this. Everybody's not interested in being practicing Sankofa or not interested in Pan-Africanism or Black nationalism. But I think it's time for us to focus on those of us who are in the ranks, I would say, to once again create spaces for us and our children. So that we can begin to raise or create the type of human being that we're going to need to move us into the 21st century. So that's the piece with the Pan-Africanism, the Pan-African movement with it in the context of seeing ourselves through the lens of our ancestors and our creator. So the next piece I just want to go into is around in the 1960s, when brothers and sisters were fighting on the campuses for Black studies, a lot of this research, a lot of this information came out of that movement. So once again, when we think about Brother Karinga, Brother Asante, once again, Wade Nobles, Naeem Akbar, Baba Caban, when they started receiving these PhDs, they transitioned from the European social construct into understanding that we need our own science, our own reality, to define our reality living under these conditions of these oppressive and inhumane conditions that we were dealing with. So these brothers and the sisters once again created the study of Black African developmental psychology. So those of us who have come behind them and studying their work, we're continuing to attempt to build on that work, that body of work, to once again help repair and heal ourselves from these conditions of living under these racist and once again oppressive and discriminatory structures or systems that we're functioning under. So we continue to build and establish spaces and places for us to support and nurture each other through these trying times. So I think it's critical as we begin this conversation and start moving into this, is looking at this from a psychosocial historical context. And what I mean by that is looking at ourselves, how we are evolving out of the conditions of chattel slavery, out of chattel slavery, so that we can start understanding the assault that is on our psyche. Most cultures or most ethnicities that come to America have had a period in their history where they were not under attack. And I think a lot of times we lose sight of the reality that for the 500 years that we've been amongst these people, we have not had a moment where we are not under attack from some form of, once again, domestic terrorism, the policies and laws and ordinances that they practice to keep us in the condition that we in. So like I say, so a lot of times we lose sight of that, and we are too critical of ourselves without looking at it from that perspective. So as we have this conversation, I would just like for us to understand the concept of I call it time behind enemy lines, and dealing with the reality of the time. So from 1619 to 1865, 246 years, which is 63% of our time in these Americas, we were chattel slaves. So 246 years, we were chattel slaves. And so I say that to say that even under those conditions, even under those dehumanizing conditions, we were able to maintain a certain level of our spirituality and a certain level of our culture, that we were able to survive that condition. I always say our captivity is older than this nation. I'm going to say that again. Our captivity is older than this nation. So when you look at the conditions of our people, you cannot fault us for our circumstances. We are the result of a continuous assault and attack on our spiritual, psychological, and physical being. So as we move forward on this weekly basis having this conversation, I'm just trying to give all of us a frame of reference to come out of. So as we move and have the conversations, individual can be functioning out of a conceptual belief system that is grounded in a reality of the time of what we have experienced. From 1865 to 1965, that 100-year period was really the first time that a Black man or African man and an African woman was to a certain extent guaranteed to raise their children. So from 1865 to 1965, we were able to start establishing a Black family unit in many cases. And so we have to deal with that from the perspective of how, when we talk about the Black family and the assault on the Black family, in the reality of how long we have been able to create a space to establish black family. But the other piece with that, I think a lot of times that we in these conversations, we're not looking at from a time perspective. From 1865 to the early 1920s, we were building towns and cities. It wasn't like they gave us anything to produce what we needed. So when the conversations are being had about the Black Wall Streets, the Tulsa, Oklahomas, the Rosewoods, we have to understand that once again those were black townships that was once again established by black people, by African people. So we have to look at that from that perspective and start to build around that. And then really understanding the type of domestic terrorism that was taking place during that time with the sundown laws, the Ku Klux Klan, and the things that were being used to keep us out of the mainstream society. And so once again, when you look at what's going on in the streets today, we are still asking and begging and pleading for this European immigrant to give us the basic necessities that we need for our survival. So we have to be able to connect that concept to what our children, their level of understanding of the struggle, because many of them really are not connected to what our ancestors sacrificed, or they're really not we haven't socialized or educated them from a historical perspective, from a time perspective, to connect them to the reality of what our ancestors have been struggling and fighting for as well. And then once again, from 1965 to the present, in this 54 years of integration, we still are asking for the same thing. So from that perspective, when we start, as we had this conversation about from a black African developmental psychology perspective, once again, just given the audience and individuals who may not be aware, because I've learned I don't want to assume that individuals are aware of that. Maybe some of this information is old to some of us. Maybe it's something that's new to some of us. But for the simple fact that we have not been able to create the necessary institutions to change the conditions, clearly this is not old. Clearly there's something wrong in our psychological development that we are unable to create the necessary spaces that's needed.
Signed, there's a place once, for it inside once, them.
All right, gang, this is a very basic single shot shock.
And that goes to the reality of, once again, of understanding the different tactics that are being used to keep us divided. And so we have to, once again, look at this from a psychosocial historical context to see how social policy, the social engineering of certain behaviors, how the Democrats and the Republicans play games with us as it relates to the political realm, how we have been socialized to be consumers and not understanding what black nationalism is and pan-Africanism and understanding how the pan-Africanism and socialism creates from a socialist perspective, helping our people understand what socialism is so that we can understand a collective from a collective perspective, to build institutions where the institutions are built to for the benefit of everybody. So part of, once again, when we start talking about this black developmental psychology, we're really talking about an African-centered reality, an African-centered perspective, an African-centered curriculum that we must create to, once again, transform or produce human beings that we need to move us into the 21st century. So as we have this conversation about an African psychology, it's really about an African-centered educational socialization. So as we begin to once again build on this conversation, I'm hoping individuals will be able to not necessarily just identify what's negatively being said, but being able to identify, look at what's positive in the conversation, and let's build on the positive. I think a lot of times we spend a lot of time trying to find fault in what individuals are saying instead of looking at starting off with what's the positive, what's the benefits, what's the best idea, who has the best idea to move something. And within the context of the idea, what is the implementation process to that? What does it look like from a theoretical perspective, create a modality or, once again, an implementation or a practice to move us out of the condition that we are in? And I just want to go into the tribalism. It continues to interfere with us being able to sustain ourselves. And what I mean by the tribalism is that we have different schools of thought, different ideologies, I'm going to say schools of thought and ideology, and I'm just saying, you know, we got the Nation of Islam, we got the Hebrew Israelites, we got the Moors, the Moor Science Temple, we got the Nuwabians, we got the 5%, we got Christians, we got the young brothers who are G's, who are folks, who are lords, we got the fraternities and the sororities. So we have all of these different spaces and places where we are unable to unify under one flag. And that continues to be an issue as it relates to us being able to unify. But I'm hoping coming out of this crisis, out of this pandemic, that we realize that those, I'm going to use the word superficial identities, are things that you choose to be. But this system of racism does not ask you what church, what Moor, are you a Moor? No, actually, when they want to kill you, one of those European immigrant males wants to kill you, he's just going to kill you. So we got to get to a place where we can see past those titles, those different ideologies, to organize ourselves under one flag. And we have some models, some formulas that our ancestors were moving on. And once again, we can go back to Marcus Garvey. We can go back to Noble Drew Ali. We can go to Booker T. Washington and W.E. Du Bois, Elijah Muhammad, many of some of the Christian pastors prior to the integration. Many of them, once again, had some different perspectives on how we should integrate or should we integrate. But I'm just saying, I think we need to go back and look at some of those formulas to build on so that we don't have to continuously reinvent the wheel. And so part of that is, once again, understanding the process of our culture is an evolving process. It's not necessarily stuck in a certain time frame. We have to be mature enough and understand that and being able to take information that our ancestors were using at that particular time, but being able to move that information into the 21st century to create sustaining institutions for our people. And so part of that, once again, is getting that information, establishing institutions, and us taking the responsibility and ownership of educating ourselves and our children. A lot of times I think we, once again, in our underdevelopment, under this European social construct, we've been once again underdeveloped in such a way that we don't recognize that it's insane to send your children to an institution that is not going to prepare them for the next phase or for the 21st century. So at some point we have to take ownership of this. And you would never see a Jew or a Jewish family or a Jewish institution send their children to somebody else to be educated, to the Germans to be educated. So part of, once again, with this, as we had this conversation from a Black African developmental psychology perspective, is for us to really start doing some evaluations of how we are looking at ourselves, how we are preparing ourselves and our children to once again, become a free and independent thinking people so we can continue to establish and reestablish some pieces on that concept.
Doc Rogers.
Yes.
So I just want to go into an introduction of what we're going to do. I know it's coming up on the next hour, so I didn't know if I should I continue to go into the information or you want to go into the beginning of the hour.
Well, no, you're doing a powerful job of introducing this concept of the Elders Council and some of the work that you're going to be doing using this format. So I would just say continue to explain and talk about how this can be embraced by all of you. You have many people that are online right now. And so as soon as we do open up, and I will say to our audience, we will open up the lines for you to make comments or ask questions. For those of you who are on the Internet, you can give us a call at area code 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And so, Brother Alfonso, I would continue maybe and make sure that we clearly understand what's getting ready to be done. And, you know, and you, like I said, you've done a powerful job of bringing that to the format. I'm really appreciative to have you a part of the Black Reality Think Tank family. Thank you so much. So
all right.
Go right and continue.
All right, Baba. Thanks. And thanks for once again and sharing this space with me. Just a little bit about me and Baba's relationship. I got out the service. I'm a military veteran. I was in the Marines. I got out the service in 92. And I think I met Baba around 93, 94. He was, were you the president or vice president of, what was that, the black mentor and the,
100 black men?
Yeah.
I was president at one time, and then I became executive director.
Right. But that's when I met Dr. Rogers. So I was, you know, fresh out of the military, and then, landed a job at, Malcolm X Academy, which was they were starting an African-centered curriculum. So from 92 to 97, once again, I had some exchanges and interaction with Dr. Rogers. So we became real good friends. I've been under his tutelage at his feet, sucking up the knowledge that he has to offer. So that has really been, this has really been a good experience. Being in his space, being able to learn from him as well. I'm going to go back to a little bit about myself. I've worked for MPS, the Bureau of Child Welfare here in Milwaukee. I've worked for Head Start. I've worked for the juvenile correctional facility, the adult correctional facility. I've worked for Milwaukee County as a psychiatric crisis worker. I've worked for, there's another component to the county, which is wraparound, where once I got my master's, I was able to become an in-home lead therapist. So my lens, I would say, is I've had an opportunity to work in many of the industries, I'm going to say, or institutions that function on us being dysfunctional. I'm going to say that again. Many of the institutions that function on us being dysfunctional, I have had an opportunity to work for. So as we had this conversation, I'm going to be able to bring a lens of how these institutions are industries that benefit on the lifestyles that we are being forced to live in. Based on, once again, environmental and social, the toxicity of racism. And so as we had this conversation, I'll be able to articulate what I've seen, what I've experienced with going into the court system, working with judges, working with public pretenders, working with caseworkers, working with correction officers. So I'll be able to, once again, share that insight from that perspective so that people will understand, once again, how these industries continue to flourish and function on us being dysfunctional. So when we start talking about a Black African developmental psychology and we start talking about an African-centered curriculum or African-centered reality. We start talking about Pan-Africanism or Black nationalism. It's a reality that for us is for us to take responsibility for self. It's an opportunity for us to be self-determined. And once again, that's a whole nother mindset. And many of our people are so programmed and so conditioned, they can't see themselves functioning without this European. But it's actually, and Amos Wilson talks about it all the time, it's actually the other way around. They can't function without us. Once we become responsible, once we reestablish the relationship between the African man and his African woman and reestablish the Black family, we can change the conditions of many of our cities. But once again, we have to first begin to repair and heal ourselves. But the other piece of it is, too, we got to get in position where we can defend and protect ourselves. And that's what the reality of what we're dealing with. So that's, to a certain extent, for some people, that's an uncomfortable conversation. But we're going to have to get to a place, especially as African men, we have to draw the line with what is going to go down in our communities. And so when I think about the 60s and the 70s, when I was a shorty, there was just a certain code in the community. There were just certain things that we knew we couldn't do. And if something went down, we always knew that something was going to happen. So we have to get back to that. But we have to also understand, once again, from a war perspective, what tactics, what type of policies, what type of laws that they implemented to create the void of Black men in the community. And so like I said, some of that information is old news to us, but once again, if it's old news, why haven't we been able to defend and protect ourselves from the reality that we see we are under attack? There's an assault on us. So why is it that we have not been able to position ourselves to defend and protect ourselves? And once again, this goes back to this Black African developmental psychology and understanding how it has impacted our personality configuration, how internalized racism creates some dysfunctional personalities in us that we have to identify and address. And so once again, as we continue to build on this conversation, we'll be able to have these conversations from the information that, once again, that our African scholars and African ancestors have laid for us to really dive into and do, once again, a more of a critical analysis of this information. Because I think we're spending a whole lot of time with individuals writing books, doing dissertations, and I'm not saying nothing's wrong with that. I am saying, though, that there's information, there's books that our ancestors have put forth that we have not tried to implement. Right. We have not put the necessary work into these books, into these theoretical modalities to change our condition. So I think, once again, I think part of that is understanding how internalized racism interferes with us being able to validate one another, being able to acknowledge the genius in one another. Mm-hmm. And it interferes with us being able to move forward as a collective group of people. And that's, once again, that's where that tribalism comes in, that if you ain't part of a certain fraternity or a sorority, if you ain't in the nation, if you ain't a Hebrew Israelite, we ain't gonna mess with you like that. My way is the best way. And we have to mature past that if we expect to survive going into the 21st century. So this is a prime time as it relates to those of us here in America. We are the best prepared to do this. We are the best prepared Africans to do what needs to be done, because we have lived amongst this European all this time, and we still produce positive, productive human beings. So we got to get to a place where we able to recognize and use our own God-given human talents, gifts, and potential for our own benefit. And so that's a whole nother mindset. That's a whole nother level of thinking where those of us who are studying Pan-Africanism, those of us who are practicing Sankofa, those of us who understand Black nationalism, we got to create hubs for one another so that we can once again support, love, and nurture one another so we can keep the movement, keep the fight going as we move into the 21st century, because it's our time. And we have to seize this time. We have to seize the momentum of what's going on the planet. And so I think it's critical that we recognize the time that we're living in and the importance of what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, because we are capable of doing it. We have elders, brothers and sisters in our community who have retired, who got money, sitting on money, and don't know what to do with the money. So they're just wasting the money. But we got to get to a place where we're willing to make investments to establish institutions that we control, that we run, that we got full range of doing what we need to do to prepare ourselves and our children to be independent. And so once again, that's a whole nother conversation. And we got to get back to that, because we've lost the fight as it relates to what our brothers and my ancestors did in the 60s. The sacrifices that they made. I don't necessarily agree with nonviolence, but that's the method that they chose to use at that time. But once again, the sacrifice that they was making, they knew they were not going to receive the benefits of what they sacrificed. The sacrifices that they made, they knew it was going to come for the generations to come behind them. And so we have to get that type of spirit back, where we make sacrifices today to produce institutions, but not only make the sacrifice today to produce institutions, but produce the soldiers to protect those institutions. And I think that's where the Nation of Islam is a model for us, for how they have been able to sustain themselves over this long period of time. The brother Hebrew Israelites, the soldiers that they producing under the teachings of the Hebrew Israelites.
I'm sorry, I hate to stop you. I know you're on a roll. I got to take this break. We're at the top of the hour, we're going to come back, because this is heavy, man. This is heavy. And like I said, I don't want to stop your momentum, you know, so just put it on pause for a minute. We're going to come right back, open up the lines to the audience, and give you a chance. Let Brother Alfonso do it. You're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. This is a new addition to our family. This is the Elders Council under the direction of Brother Alfonso Watkins, and he has been giving us the law, the real deal. And as Marvin Gaye said in the beginning of the song, make you want to holler. So anyway, let's take a break. We'll come right back pick up with some conversation from our audience as well. Thank you so much.
Night descends as the sun's light ends, and black comes back to blend again.
Wake up.
And with the death of the sun, night and blackness become one. Blackness. Civilizations that once flourished and grew. Hey, wake up, niggas, are y'all through? Drowning in a puddle of the white man's spit as you pause for some draws in the midst of shit and ain't got nothing to save your funky ass with. You cool fool, sipping on a menthol cigarette round midnight, rapping about how the Big Apple is out of sight. You ain't never had a bite. Who are you fooling? Me? You? Wake up, niggas, are y'all? Junkies are dreaming of total bliss somewhere in the atmosphere, far away from here, beyond realms of white dimensions, guided by suppressed intentions, as their cries go unrecognized, except by their keeper, the Grim Reaper. Save me a corner, you shout as the lights go out, cause you ain't paid the electric bill, and the rats and roaches move on into the kill as your lips struggle to drain that last drop from the wine.
great, great black man.
Amen.
You niggas understand?
Wake up.
Up against the wall,
wake
black
up.
Maryland farmers.
Wake up.
I'll blow you away.
Wake up.
And you'll never live to see the light of day.
Wake up.
And a nightstick, with a nightstick, it glides
wake
gracefully upside your head.
Wake up.
That's right, brothers and sisters,
wake
you, the living dead.
Wake
with
up.
The cock crows.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We're back, my brothers and sisters. We are here with the African American Elders Council here in Milwaukee with Brother Alfonso Watkins. He is laying down the law. We appreciate that. We're going to for those of you who are on the internet, if you would like to call in and give us your comments or ask questions, our number again is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We will be here every Saturday from 6 p.m. Central Time to 8 p.m. With the Elders Council. And Brother Watkins will continue to lay out the foundations of what this program is attempting to do in our community and the kind of work that we want to do and the spirit of the kind of work as well as the philosophy. And very clearly we're looking forward to talking and working with many of you as well. And maybe you get a chance today, he'll introduce to you some of the individuals who are part of this Elders Council and some of the other kind of upcoming work that's going to be done. This program will also be hosting guests from time to time, and we'll be continue to move in the format that we're doing so. So again, if you wish to call us, 215-490-9832. Also, the program will be archived, and all you need to do is go to our website at www.timeforanawakening.com, go to the podcast portal that says the Black Reality Think Tank, and you will then be able to find the program, particularly this program or any others that we do. We have three other programs on this Black Reality Think Tank family, and one of those programs airs every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9, every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9. The basic same type of format. We are talking about politics and economics and social life and religious life and entertainment life and everything that embraces the African journey and spirit of this country. So that's every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on the TimeForAnAwakening.com network. And then on Thursday, we will be, this program will begin this Thursday, and it begins at 8 o'clock. And we will be working with a group of young ladies. They like to call themselves the Millennium, and they will be discussing issues around children, families, relationships, and some of those social concerns that are very dominant in our community and also can be very troubling from time to time. So
Beth Sydney says people who fill prescriptions at CVS are better than most at staying on them, which tends to...
I apologize. Someone has their mic on and they're playing some music in the background. But anyway, we want to be able to listen to them, and hopefully we'll be able to talk with them about some of the things that they are concerned with as well. And that's on Thursday evening. And then on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, right before this program, we just had the broadcast today, is the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Program with guest hosts Ms. LaWanda Chambers and Ms. Leola Williams. They do a powerful job of discussing those issues from a female perspective, from the womb, and give us insight on things that they see and the way that they look at it as women. And so we appreciate them. They're a very dynamic program. So they're here every Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. Now, however, this Saturday coming up is going to be a little bit different. They're going to be on Tuesday this time. The weekend edition will be aired on Tuesday. And then the Tuesday program is going to be aired on Saturday from 3. And there's a reason for that, because the guests for our program will be a young brother from the U.K., and they are about 6 hours ahead of us, so we wanted to give him an opportunity. If we tried to do that on Tuesday, then we would have been calling him around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So we wanted to do it. He is a very gifted musician. He is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he is playing with the London Philharmonic, and we're going to talk to him about his experience in the U.K. as well as some other things relating to him. He's a young man, too. And just to kind of hear from him. So I'm so happy to get a chance to do that. He is the son of a very popular community activist in our community as well. So we want to be able to hear from him. And that's on this Saturday coming up at 3 o'clock. So those are our outline of our programs. We are growing. I'm thankful for Brother Elliot out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who is the developer of the Time for an Awakening platform. He has a program that comes on as well on Friday, from 8 to 10, called Time for an Awakening. He also airs on Sunday from 7 to 10, and the program is called Time for Awakening. And he and his co-host, Brother Richard, do a magnificent job of interviewing some very powerful people of our nation who are in this struggle for African-American liberation. And so it's a good program. And then there's a very familiar person to us as well. He has a program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. His name is Brother Oshiemi Adelabu, and his program is African Perspectives. And his program comes on from 11 a.m. Eastern Time to 1 p.m. Eastern Time every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's called African Perspectives. And I invite all of you to listen to that as well, or either go to the website and get a copy or listen to any of his archived programs. So with that, we're going to get back to my dear brother, Alfonso. I appreciate him as well. As he, like he said, he and I met a long time ago. I was so impressed with him as a young brother looking to get out here. He was working with myself and Brother Taki Ratan, who is now an ancestor. Yeah. And dear brother. And we enjoyed sitting down many times, talking about things, participating in stuff. So I'm so happy that Brother Alfonso is still here working with us and doing some of those things. So with that, Brother Alfonso, you can just tell me whenever you're ready to open up the lines, and I'll do so. I'm going to turn the program back over to you.
All right. Thank you, Baba. I just wanted to go back to one of the foundational principles of the Sankofa Elders Council here in Milwaukee is not necessarily to recreate, but to establish a rite of passage program from infancy to elder. In order for us to repair and heal ourselves, all of us need to go through some form of a rite of passage to reconnect ourselves to practicing or having a practice of practicing Sankofa. Of resurrecting the African consciousness, our African personality, our African reality. Part of what we're seeing in our communities as it relates to mental health, with so many of our brothers and sisters who have lost their indigenous African minds attempting to navigate their way through this illusion of white supremacy, racism, and discrimination, is that they don't have an alternative reality to function out of. So what that creates is, once again, when Du Bois talked about a dual consciousness, that we are African people who are being forced to function as Europeans, is creating a bipolar or schizophrenic personality configuration in us. So when we see our brothers and sisters on the street talking to themselves and they're getting younger and younger, families. So many young brothers and sisters are losing their mind out here trying to navigate, trying to understand and function in this insane European social construct. So we have to create a space to help these brothers and sisters return back to their African personality for those who are willing to put the work in. So that's part of, once again, with the council, the African Sankofa Council of Elders, That's a key component of creating that component of a rites of passage or manhood and womanhood training. A lot of times when we start having these conversations, it gets more philosophical as it relates to how a traditional rites of passage process went when we was on the continent and even here. But there are some things from a human development perspective within the lifespan that we got to start creating a curriculum to or create a buffer to protect our children and ourselves during these critical stages of our human development so that our brains can be given the opportunity or given the correct information to function on. Because in order for you to be mentally healthy, you have to be functioning on information that is actual and factual, that connects you to your history, that connects you to your story, that connects you to your ancestors. Every other ethnicity, once again, family, has a period where they were at, where they wasn't under attack. So they were able to establish or reestablish in their culture, their cultural foundation. We have not been able to do that here in America, family. So when we have these conversations, a lot of times I listen to how critical we are of ourselves and of our people. A lot of times I just think we lose sight of how racism, the structure of it, the systematic, the systemic and structural and institutional racism, how it operates, and once again, especially how it operates as it relates to our human development. So I just want to throw that the rites of passage in the manhood and womanhood training is going to be critical for us to be able to heal the relationship between the black man, the African man, and the African woman. We have to work. We have to create spaces for that healing, for us to be able to say to our sisters, we sorry that we have not been able to protect you. But we have not even been able to protect ourselves from this European male. So there's a constant assault on our relationship. There's a constant assault on us being able to do the things that we need to do as it relates to our as the African family, as it relates to that. So as we had this conversation, I know there's brothers and sisters out there doing some good work, putting in work. So we need to be able to, once again, come up with these theoretical modalities, the practices, the implementations of what's going to be required for our children to see healthy relationships. And we got to turn that TV off, family. That's going to be a whole other conversation. But you can open up the lines, Baba.
Okay. Thank you so much. We're going to go. Let's go over here to Greensboro, North Carolina, to Sister Yan. See what she might have to say. Good afternoon, Sister Yan. How are you? Just a minute. I think I might not have opened your line. Okay, here we go. Sister Yan, how you doing?
All right. I'm well. How are you?
Great.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes,
okay.
I can hear you.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Rogers, and good evening to the brother. Is it Brother Anthony?
Brother Alfonso, sister.
Alfonso, okay. Last name, I don't want to just take the liberty of calling you Anthony, but I didn't catch your last name. But anyway, I made it a point to make sure that I was available to listen to this, this initial show, because for me and Dr. Rogers, you know exactly where I'm coming from. This is the most important issue in our lifetime, or in this era, rather, and that's the psychological damage that we're suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It is so massive that we have to, like, seriously get to work on this and stay very consistent, because every part of our community has been impacted. Our families are so divided, are divided in ways that are the total opposite of the way that the African mind and African society works. So there's a whole lot of healing that needs to occur. So I'm not going to be long. I just want to say self-hatred is something that needs to be really, really attacked. And we've done, where I am in Greensboro, I've said many times, we've done initiatives called Dinner and Dialogue, where we bring the community together, you know, all kinds of rosters, Nation of Islam, Christians, et cetera, and we talk, and we get taught by someone, and then we have conversation about what we've heard. Dr. Anderson, Renoko Rashidi, you know, those people that are conscious of what's happened to us and that bring solutions. But we got to deal with this self-hatred, because that prevents us from embracing the solutions that, and everybody's asking what solution, the solutions that we have implemented. You know, we couldn't even do them today.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up during the Black Nationalist Movement, the things that we did then, creating nationalist schools and cultural centers, I don't know that we could do them today because of the level of division that's going on. So I really feel strongly that we should attack this self-hatred that's going on, where people don't even want to be African anymore. And another quick thing, I'm watching those of us, even that have been conscious, get sucked in by so much nonsense that's on the social media. You can hear some of anything, and people don't want to be African. They want to be from space, and they want to be, you know, indigenous here. They want to be Kablan Asian or whatever. So we got to get back to that thing that holds us, the glue that holds us together, and that's African. What's being African? Define what that is, and embrace who we are. I think that's just a critical first step to restart, because we've already done it. We've already been there. So I'll stop there.
All right. Thank you. Alfonso, you want to respond?
Yes, I totally agree with her. I think we are at a very critical, another very critical of our critical period of our story. As our 400 years, moving into the 21st century, what's going on the continent of Africa, our brothers and sisters on the continent are waking up. Our brothers and sisters in the UK are waking up. Our brothers and sisters on the islands are waking up. So I think there's a time that we, a window that we have, as once again, those of us here in America, once again, being the best, I think we are the best prepared to make this happen. I think there's a reality to that everybody ain't coming. We may not have a large number of people, because once again, they've done a magnificent, this European male is truly a mad scientist as it relates to his ability to interrupt the natural flow of thought process, the attacks, the assaults, the warfare that he's using. We have to get to a whole nother level of understanding of how we are being attacked. Once again, psychologically, spiritually, and physically, these Europeans created chemicals that we digest that interfere with how the neurotransmitters in our brains, how in our liver, in our kidney, how those genes, how they function. So we have to once again get to a whole nother level of understanding of the attack as it relates to our ability to defend ourselves from this this European male in his once again psychological and spiritual warfare and chemical warfare.
All right, let's go to Montgomery, Alabama, Brother Lush, one of our strong and very good supporters. Brother Lush, as you give us your comment, I just want to ask you also, how's your African American mayor doing? I know you have an African American mayor now. How's that administration?
The first, he's doing well. He's doing well with, he's only been in office now for about 6 months or so, seven months.
Okay.
I'm sure it's a learning experience with him. And we with him. So it's kind of right now everyone being patient, especially underneath the kinds and types of, you know, pandemics we're dealing with the the issues, with the social issues. So it's just a matter of just being patient with him and he with us. And also along with the brother that's in Talladega, Alabama as well, who is the first Black mayor there. Brother Watkins, I too wanted to make it a point to be on this inaugural run with you, because there are so many things that we could talk about. And one of the things I think that needs to be called attention to it pertains to functional illiteracy that runs rampant within the black community.
Yes, I think
we really, really have to take that under consideration. It's one of those pink elephants that we may not give attention to, but we really would have to. You know, and taking Sister Yan's lead on this and adding and bringing bricks to this foundation, part of this self-hatred, I think, happens when there is a functional illiteracy that we're just not being made aware of.
Yes.
So when we start talking about Pan-Africanism, when we start talking about, Pan-Africanism and black nationalism, there are words, there are phrases, there are concepts that really, really have become a part of this. And so not everybody knows those words and phrases and concepts. Not everyone are familiar with regards to the kinds and types of scholarships that's out. And so do we, as people of African descent, take the time out to write two sets of notes, the set of notes that's been given to us through our European education counterpart, and the other set of notes that would counteract those pieces of information that's given.
That's
so there are processes that I think that will hopefully be developed through this, and I'm sure with your leadership and with your experience and expertise, we'll be going in that kind and type of direction.
Great.
But I wanted to bring that point out as well, and to really see where do we go from here with what you're developing and how, what is it that we need to do? What is it that I need to do to help in this process of building? So I want to thank you so very much. I'm with you through this, and we'll definitely be tuning in for many more weeks to come. Thank you so very much. Asante sana, brother. Asante sana.
Right. Thank you, my
brother.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All right. Let's go to 414-588. Would you like to say something, caller, or would you just listen? 414-588. Okay, I guess they're just listening. Baton Rouge, where do we go from here, Brother Pugh? Chaos or community? What do you think?
Yes. Good afternoon, everybody. I would just,
good afternoon, my brother.
Okay, I would just ask this question. I was listening to DeRay McKesson. He's one of the people at Campaign Zero. And he was talking today about moving from you know, the role of police to the role of experts in our community. And I noticed you were using the word elder. So could you tell me what's the difference between elders and experts?
I mean, elders have information, wisdom, and knowledge based on their life experiences. I think there's a number of elders in our community who can help connect the dots in certain municipalities as it relates to what has happened from a historical point in your locality, or that what has happened, that has happened in your city. I think a lot of times, as when we have these conversations, being able to connect the history of how certain conditions have evolved, we need that information so that we can connect the dots, so that we can help our young brothers and sisters, the millennials, understand how it has gotten to this condition, how we've gotten here. Now, an expert is those brothers and sisters who have went to school, who have had certain positions and titles in the corporate world, in certain industries or institutions where they can speak to a level of expertise about how those systems function. So that we can have an understanding of how those systems function, but also from a black, and I know you know this, I'm from a black African developmental psychologist, right? When you talk about the social construction of reality, how reality is constructed based on knowledge, we have to understand how those sciences function. so that we can be functioning out of the reality of natural law. Because a lot of times, and me and you didn't have this conversation, Baba, about we have to be able to understand certain formulas, certain laws, so that when we have these conversations, it's not just an abstract thought, but we able to create an actual formula or practice to change the condition or understand how those sciences, how those industries are functioning to protect and defend ourselves. So that would be my definition between an elder and an expert.
It sounds like a pretty solid definition. I think, right, that I can see the power of it. And the final thing is, could you comment on what's going on today in terms of the level of activity and protest? What are the implications of that for the Elders Council and so on? Is that helpful or harmful or irrelevant, or how do you see it?
Baba, I think it's an opportunity for the elders in these communities and our communities to position ourselves, the elders. When this died down, the young brothers and sisters have elders and experts that they can come to and have conversations about what they experience, but also how do we move forward? And how do we move forward not asking the European for anything, but creating a space for us to be independent thinkers?
One of the things that everyone seems to be doing is they're asking the people what's their vision of society. In other words, they realize that the economic system doesn't work, the police system doesn't work, and so on. And so they're basically saying that, it's a wide open forum for people to come up with their vision of how things should be. I'm just wondering, it seems like,
Yeah, and once again, I think that's where the eldership and the expertise come in on our part. And I think the other piece of it is, too, I think we have to realize that we are in a position where we have to become, look at this from a collective preservation perspective. And what I mean by that is that we can't continue to carry everybody else. We really have to look at our situation as a unique situation, and how do we, once again, prepare ourselves to move into the 21st century. And the brother that just called before you, he hit it on the head as it relates to the level of illiteracy in our communities. And once again, that's a social engineered behavior.
Yeah.
We have to understand that the technology that is being used is dumbing our children down. It's dumbing us down in a way that we don't even want to hold a book. We don't even want a book. We want to get all our information from the phone and from the computer, and that's a different relationship with the brain. So we have to start understanding that, and I don't know, I think me and you had a conversation about the science of neuro-linguistics.
We haven't had that one yet, no.
We don't have that one. We don't have that one, but I think that's a critical component of us understanding the science of linguistics and the words usage, and how words organize our thinking in such a way where we have to begin to be able, and I'm going to say something about us, family. We so cold, we use the enemy's language to shape our reality. And so a lot of times we don't understand or recognize our genius and our ability to, we're not Europeans, we're not English, but we are using their language to construct a reality that we continue to fight, we continue to resist, we continue to produce positive, productive human beings under this condition. So a lot of times I think we be too hard on ourselves, but we are some cold people, y'all. We got to create spaces to nurture, love, and protect one another so that we can continue to create human beings, but create human beings that understand that their talent and resources have to be used for the upliftment of the nation, upliftment of those who say we are a nation. So we're going to have to carve out what is going to be our flag, what is going to be our constitution, what is going to be our code of conduct. So that's, I think that's where we at this time in our story, and everybody ain't coming. So I know there are some groups, and I know the brothers and sisters in Detroit are doing some things as it relates. We're talking about sovereignty. In Cobra is doing some things around reparations. The New Black Panthers, I know they're doing some things. So we have to get to a place where we are willing to come up under one flag and function as a collective group of people.
Okay, so, let's go to 414-412. Are you listening, caller, or would you like to say something?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Brother Alfonso, it's Brother Jacob Gatlin in Milwaukee, bro. Man, I'm just happy to hear you brothers talking.
What's happening, brother?
All right, man. I've been listening to this Brother Alfonso for quite a little while here in Milwaukee, man. And we appreciate you here, bro. Keep on giving us that knowledge. We need it.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you too, brother.
All right. Thank you, caller. Thank you. Area code 414-899. Listening, or you want to say something?
I'm listening. I'm just listening.
Fantastic.
That's all.
Okay.
I have nothing to say.
All right. Thank you so much. Area code 414-588. Are you listening? Would you like to say something? Area code 414-588. Okay, just listening. 414-810. 414-810. Listening. Comments. All right. 414-243. Listening or comments?
Actually, this is 414-810.
Okay. Yes.
Hi. Hi. I just want to call in and congratulate and give my acknowledgement and my praise to Brother Watkins.
Yes, ma'am.
I am enjoying all that I've heard. I think he's an awesome young man, and I want him to keep fighting the fight.
All right.
All right.
All right. Thank you, big sister.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling, caller. Area code 414-243. Okay. 839, 414, area code 839. Okay, just listening. 414-839. Just want to make sure. Okay. Well,
hey, how's it going, Doc Rogers?
Oh, good. How you doing, my brother?
Brother Alfonso? Oh, yeah. I'm here.
Hey, okay.
I've been all this time. Good, good. I'm so blessed to have just listened to this and just get some other personal history I didn't know about you. Yeah, I think this is great, you know, being in this fight, and I know that this is long term.
Yes,
and
it is.
You're dedicated to it, and I'm just learning a lot to prepare and go out there and do what needs to be done.
All right,
so I appreciate you,
and I appreciate you, Brother Harris. Right, thank you so much for your Brother Harris was one of our guests on the Tuesday night program. Did a magnificent job explaining to us.
Yes, he did.
Police mentality. Thank you so much, Brother Harris. Appreciate you. And he's also a part of the Elders Council as well. So we definitely,
He's also a part of the Council of Elders as well.
Right. That's right. Exactly. Area code 414-324. Are you listening, Carly? You want to say something?
Hey, Doc. How you doing?
Brother Oshi, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well.
Good.
What's up?
Hey, family.
I'm so glad. Is this program going to be on Thursday night?
No, this program is on Saturday evening from 6 to 8.
Oh, okay. Okay, so this will be after the Saturday.
Right, after the Young Ladies.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I thought it was going to be on. Well, anyway, I'm so glad. And of course, just another arm in the battle for the minds of our people.
Yes, indeed.
That we need more and more of, you know, because we don't understand what we're up against. And now we're trapped in the illusion of what they see on these demonstrations and all the kneeling with the police and the hugs and so forth. And, you know, none of that will really help us as a people, you know, going forward. It'll be the same old, same old. We've lived through this, Doc.
Yes.
Yeah. We've lived through this.
Yeah.
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 You know, this is no different than in the 60s. No different.
That's right.
I mean, we really didn't start to demonstrate and start tearing some stuff up until that time.
That's right.
Prior to getting off the plantation, and being in segregation in terror. You know?
Right.
We didn't go to the Caucasian neighborhood and demonstrate and march at their house.
No, we didn't.
We didn't demonstrate at all.
Right.
Because we would be killed. And so then we got more courage, especially in the North. We started flexing the Black Panther Party. Say it loud, I'm black, I'm proud, whatever, whatever. And we hear, but what's different now, as opposed to them, you see a lot of Caucasians in the riot. There weren't no Caucasians in the riot back when we was, you know.
No, there weren't.
Because if a Caucasian, you would get his ass whooped.
None.
T.
No. But there's a lot of Caucasians that you see, and many of them are the instigators. Many of them are spray painting and handing out bricks and so forth and total destruction. But it's really, you know, really what it's going to do, who the hell knows? You know, everywhere around the world, because of the technology, everybody's having demonstrations and talking about Black Lives Matter and talking about, you know, Brother George Floyd, you know.
Yes.
And it'll die down and it'll be back to business as usual.
Right.
And obviously business as usual is something that we don't want. We don't want the same of. But it doesn't matter what we want, because Black lives don't matter. What it is mind over matter. They don't mind doing to us what they have done to us and continue to do to us, because to them, we don't matter. We mattered as property because of the amount of money that they bought us, but the many years and decades of work, of labor, far outweighed the few hundred of dollars that they might have paid.
Right.
And then, of course, after that's over, the tyranny and the terror of lynching, then segregation, and then it explodes in the 60s, and now we're here almost 100 years later than in the Tulsa massacre. Next year is the 100th anniversary. And it shows that even when we try to do something for ourselves in their environment, it's not going to happen. And so I don't see anything happening from this situation that we're witnessing. This is the 12th day of demonstrations. And that's good. Continue to shine light on an issue that has truly been deeply affecting us for some time. But we'll see.
Right.
And to me, the big push for us should be, once again, Pan-Africanism. Once again, liberation, self-determination.
Are. Amen.
Sovereignty. Sovereignty for the people. And if it doesn't move us to that, let those who understand that, let's come together, let's move on that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Agreement.
Otherwise, big brother.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, man, and I appreciate that you're going to be on, and I'll be listening.
Yes, indeed.
And of course, you're always welcome to come on my program, brother. You know that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're going to break bread. We're going to break bread.
Okay, then. All right, yes. Peace, family.
What are some of the stuff you got coming up, Brother Oshie? Anything you want to tell our audience?
No special guests, anything coming in the week. Definitely thank you to Brother for mentioning Conrad. You know, I'm going to do a tribute to Conrad and get some of the guys in the National Black United Front, because that's how I met him, you know. I think I met him within Cobra, when they had in Cobra in Chicago in the early 90s, right? Because this is right before they did the Men's More for Reparations and Durbin.
Right.
For Durbin.
Right. Yeah, that's why I met him at too. Yeah, I met him at Chi-Town too.
Yeah.
I
met him through you, Brother Ocean.
That's why when I was told that he had the virus, I said, I don't know, man. Conrad is going to make it. He's old, cantankerous, and strong, and, you know, but unfortunately not. And I know he touched a lot of lives, man.
Yeah, he did.
Beautiful brother. Beautiful brother. So I'm going to do something on that in the next couple of weeks, and putting some of the guys who are in the National Black United Front together.
Well, please be sure to let me know so I can announce it on any of the other programs that may
appreciate that. I appreciate it. Right. I appreciate that, Doc.
No doubt.
All right, y'all.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. Yeah, Brother Conrad World, I was really moved when I heard that, when he first found out he transitioned.
I know, I was shocked, man. Yeah. I mean, but having known that he was already sick, so when I told him that he had passed, I was like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Thought he was going to beat that, you know.
Exactly.
Thought he was going to, because he was a fighter, right. You know, he was a revolutionary.
Exactly.
Black power, that was the thing, black power.
Right.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, Brother Alfonso, you've got 8 more minutes. I don't know how you want to use that. I'll just turn it back over to you and let you do what you want to do until it's close out time.
Yeah. As I'm listening to, you know, I appreciate the love, the admiration that family is given. I just like to say that we at a real critical I'm going to say again, a real critical period in our evolution coming out of this condition. And I think we're going to have to pull in the ranks, those who want to be a part of this. Everybody is not coming. So I think we have to focus in on those who are interested and work out from a military perspective. Those who want to be in the space, who want to learn about Pan-Africanism, who want to learn about Sankofa, who wants to learn about Ma'at, who wants to understand what our Ma'afa is, who want to practice Sankofa. We got to create spaces for those brothers and sisters so they can pass that on to their children. And so we can build from there. I think we have spent a lot of time trying to get everybody. And once again, the European Mel and his system has done a masterful job at the psychological warfare that he's implementing, and now we got to start understanding the chemical warfare. I'm attempting to get it's a brother and sister that runs it's called nutritional therapy, and hopefully I'll be able to get them on the show soon. So they can come in and talk about what methylation is. And methylation is how your genetics, your genes function. And so based on your lab results, they can determine if you over-methylated or under-methylated. And what that does, that interferes with your physical, your physicality of your psychiatric development. When certain nutrients in your body are not balanced, so that interferes with how you function, how you think. So we have to get to that level of understanding so that we can start once again having the information needed to help our community understand how lead is impacting the children and the infants' development, how the different the diets, sugary and starchy diets are interfering with the body and how the brain functions. The chemicals from the cigarettes, the black and milds, the sodas that we drink in. We're too dependent on our enemies for the things that are once again that's impacting our lives. So we got to start having some real conversations, and not just conversations, but coming up with places and spaces where we can support and nurture one another through this, but also being able to get access to information to those who need this information.
All right. So you still got about 5 minutes. What are you going to talk about a little bit, maybe what you're going to do next week? You can give us a little background. What are your plans?
Next week, I'm hoping that I did send information to her name is Dr. Bowman, and then it's Dr. Mensah. Their clinic is out of Waukegan. One of them is in Illinois. And I don't know if it's in Waukegan. So hopefully they're listening, and then they'll be willing to come on the show. If not, I'm going to get Dr. Janine James to come on and talk about the infant mortality circumstances or situation that we're dealing with And then how do we begin to help young brothers or help brothers and sisters understand the importance of them nurturing, or the brother understanding his role in nurturing his woman during pregnancy, and the sister understanding the diet that she's on, and creating a community to start protecting and nurturing our sisters during their pregnancies, so that we can start so we can have an impact on this infant mortality and maternal conditions that we're seeing with our queens. So we got to start once again having some deliberate and intentional conversations, and in these deliberate and intentional conversations, coming up with some solutions, some implementations of some practices to move us forward. I think we have done a wonderful job of identifying what our issues are, but I think we fall short in many cases with coming up with solutions. So hopefully with the Sankofa elders, the Council of Elders, we can start creating a body of knowledge to develop theoretical approaches to address our health and improve health outcomes.
Okay.
So when we talk about health outcomes, we're talking about spiritual health, we're talking about psychological health, and we're talking about biological and physical health. Hmm. We got to start, once again, being deliberate in these conversations. And once again, reaching out to these to our brothers and sisters and our elders. We have elders in our community who are physicians, who are MDs, who have levels of expertise with the body, and we ain't even tapping into them.
Right.
Here in Milwaukee, I know of four doctors who, to a certain extent, couldn't find work, and then one of them is retired. So being able to get access to these brothers and sisters to have conversations from their level of expertise from a medical perspective is one. We have brothers and sisters who are retired politicians. We got to tap into their genius.
Right.
We got brothers and sisters who have fought on the front lines for labor, who have been on the front lines for unions. We got brothers and sisters who are in the science of economics. So we got to start reaching out to these elders, these brothers and sisters, and creating spaces to have conversations. And then the last thing I just want to say about capitalism. Capitalism breeds a dysfunctional personality in us.
Okay.
And the ego that comes with capitalism interferes with us with function. And the last thing I'm going to say, Bob, you can't be an African and a capitalist.
Okay.
It's impossible to be an African and a capitalist, because a capitalist is always for sale. When you become an African or you become a revolutionary African, your commitment, your struggle, your code of conduct is to the movement.
Okay.
So we need brothers and sisters who can function as Africans.
Gotcha.
So it's been a pleasure, Baba.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Okay.
See you
next
week. I just want
to ask a question. Who really cares?
I see.
To save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It feels.